Hello and welcome to the First Impressions edition of the Colts Cover 2 podcast. I am in Miami. I'm sitting just outside Hard Rock Stadium. Nat Newell is in, I believe, in Fishers. He's yep. in the Indianapolis area. And we are going to talk about the Colts' first win of the season. They beat the Dolphins 27-17. A game that really started out is with probably about the ugliest football you could possibly see.
The only positive early was that they were only down 3-0 when they probably deserved to be down 10 or 14 or 17-0, something along those lines. But it definitely looked like more of the same from the first three games.
Yeah, the first drive, there was a part there where it felt like going into this game, I just thought that even as bad as the Colts defense has played, and even though they have Rocky Sin out and Kari Willis out and Quiddy Pay out, I thought the Dolphins offense is just so bad that there's just no way they're going to be able to do anything. And then the first drive, and really this for most of the second one too, there was just a lot of the problems that kept coming up. The secondary wasn't tackling. They're giving up extra yardage. Jacoby Brissett wasn't really doing anything necessarily, but they were getting a lot of yardage. And you're like, man, they're just not going to get out of it. And then really, Kamoko Ture is the one who kind of snapped him out of it. He sacked Brissett and forced them into a weird field goal situation that they ended up punting. And that kind of got the defense going a little bit.
Yeah, they desperately needed something. I mean, it was all unforced errors really early. I mean, they, penalties and sacks, and one point Wentz didn't throw the ball when he should have. Julian Davenport just let a guy run free to the quarterback. But appropriate that Ture was the spark, since he also, I don't think either of us are too big into the team meeting deals, but he did call a team meeting. Veteran move, you always call the team meeting before the game. The weakest opponent on your schedule in that stretch, you don't call it against the defending AFC South champions. You don't call it against the Baltimore Ravens. You say, we're playing the Dolphins. Now is when we need our team meeting. So I assume you're somewhat similar to me in your feelings about team meetings.
Yeah, the players only meeting, I feel like it's something that teams always go back to it when they're struggling. And there might have been one in that bad stretch in 2019.
I believe there was
in the bad stretch in 2019, and it didn't really pull them out of it, in a way that was meaningful. The bigger thing is just, the Colts desperately needed somebody from the edge to get pass rush. And that was the hard part about Kamoko Ture's answer, was it sounded like he essentially started out thinking, we got to do something because we are leaving DeForest Buckner in there by himself trying to rush the passer with no help. And I can't stand watching it. And we got to figure out a way to get going. And it sort of snowballed into a big team meeting. The stuff that was said in there from what we were told is not revolutionary. Al-Qadim Muhammad said you got to play through injuries, which, I mean, I think the Colts are trying for the most part. They've been hurt so bad. I mean, they've got a lot of guys out, but Carson Wentz played through the sprained ankles. They've got other guys. Quentin Nelson played until he couldn't anymore.
Darius Leonard has clearly been, it sure seems like he's been impacted by his ankle.
Yeah. Frank Reich told Lara Overton from the Colts that with Nelson, they kind of had to put him on IR for his own good. Like, Quentin just kept saying, no, I'll be able to get through it. And they were looking at the scans. We're just like, we shouldn't let him do this. So they've got guys who are trying to play. At least that was the first thing I thought when they said that. And then the other one was just Buckner and Darius Leonard were just saying, we've got to do our job and not worry about what other people are doing or not doing. We just have to do ours, which, I mean, that's kind of the Colts philosophy as a whole. I don't know that it was, from what I heard, I think it's more just the fact that they're, I think for me, the thing is the players meeting, the fact that they held a players only meeting with the entire team is more an acknowledgement that they know that the first three games this season were bad than anything. Publicly, they've said a lot of stuff about, you got to stay positive. You can't go in the tank. But I don't know that we'd really felt like this, the frustration, except for, some Darius Leonard post-game press conferences with a lot of swearing. But,
well, I think Nelson and Kelly have both, at one point, both said there's problems. We got to get better.
They were really mad at the offensive line. But we hadn't gotten the big public acknowledgement, like this is unacceptable. The players only meeting is a sign that the team is feeling the weight of the first three losses.
Well, I always think back to when I was covering the SEC. I think it was when Remember the Titans came out, and on the weekly SEC teleconference, I believe five coaches in the SEC said, we took our team to the movie, and all five, and coincidentally, I'm sure all five of those teams had won. So I then reached out to every team in the conference and said, did you take your team to see this movie? And it turns out 10 teams had taken their team to the movies, and you only heard about it from the five that won, which I'm sure is just a coincidence and oversight by the other five teams. But I do think, I mean, a team meeting can have an impact, certainly. And I think it is, like you say, it's a good sign that the players are being accountable to each other and in some levels to the public. I don't think they would have come out if they had lost this game and said we had a team meeting. But I think it is a good sign. And it could be that, you know, maybe this does shake them out of whatever, you know, malaise they've been in. But, you know, let's see what they do against the Ravens before we get too excited.
Yeah. And the biggest thing is just they just need to fix some of these issues with the injuries. The first Davenport sack, you know, after it happened, everyone's saying, why aren't they giving him help? Why aren't they giving him help? It turned out they were supposed to give him help. Frank Reich said there was supposed to be a chip on that play. The Colts came into the game knowing Emmanuel Ogba was the guy they needed to block. They knew that was the matchup. And there was supposed to be chip help on the play, and it just never got there. Now, that does not excuse Julian Davenport looking terrible on that play, and terrible in most pass protection for most of the season. But there was supposed to be help on that play. The Colts coaching staff is not completely insane. I don't know who it was. I think maybe it was Taylor. It looked Taylor like he kind there. Of, it kind of looked but, like he attacked up the middle when he shouldn't have. But it's hard to know without looking back at it again. I'll throw this out there real quick while we're on the Davenport thing. I'm not convinced that they shouldn't just go with Matt Pryor.
I hate saying it can't get worse because it can always get worse. I also believe wholeheartedly that the coaching staff can put anybody basically in any situation they want throughout practice. So clearly they have done whatever they need to do to see how good Matt Pryor is, to see how good Davenport is, and they think Davenport's better. And you got to have some faith in that. But at some point, you know, it does get to the point where you're desperate and you have to just try something different because it doesn't seem like it can get much worse than the way Davenport's played, at least in pass protection when you notice it. Again, we're not watching every play. We don't know, you know, whose fault is what and on every situation. But it happens so often, it's hard not to think there's an issue there.
Well, the one thing that keeps coming up is that, like, tomorrow when we have our day after press conference, Frank Reich always ends up saying, you know, the protection wasn't as bad. It was just a couple of plays. But those couple of plays are such a big deal for this team with these sacks, where they keep giving up sacks. And I did think that some of it a little bit early on was Carson Wentz not getting the ball out quickly. I think one thing we've learned with Wentz so far, if you read between the lines, is that sometimes it takes him a little while to start recognizing what the defense is doing if it's not what they're prepared for. I don't know that that's an indictment on him. I mean, Andrew Luck used to say some of the same stuff when they would get it. But like you said today, like, they would come out and show man, and then they would drop back in two or three. But there were some times that I felt like he had open receivers and could get the ball out and didn't, especially early. So I felt like there was some pressure that was a little bit just Wentz holding onto the ball. But for the most part, Davenport is he's just not a good matchup against anybody. I mean, Emmanuel Ogba is a good starter in the NFL. He's a player to have. He's not like a Pro Bowler, you know. It's not the kind of guy who should you should be like, man, I'm really worried about this player. And so I don't know. I'd have to look at it again. I just haven't noticed Matt Pryor getting whiffing as badly when he's been in there, when they've rotated him in there. That's another thing we got to ask tomorrow is just, so why is it a rotation? How do you know when Matt Pryor's going in, when he's coming out? You know, that I don't fully understand either. It'd just be interesting. I mean, ultimately, the best thing for the Colts is that Braden Smith comes back. Like, I know he didn't play well in the opener, but he was better than Davenport.
And is it just, I mean, it's got to be that they think he's almost back and he just hasn't been able, I mean, otherwise they would have put him on IR, I would have
said. Frank Reich said the other day that the biggest thing was they felt like it was kind of a window thing, like it was with Wentz and them. Not, he didn't have surgery, but they felt like it was, there was a range of when he could come back. And they said, well, he's a good enough player. Let's not put him on IR in case he is back. And then it hasn't responded as well as, so I don't know what that means for when he will be back, but ultimately what they need is Braden Smith. Another good, just this continuing theme that we've got from the offensive line is Chris Reed played really well. It looked like in relief of Quentin Nelson, which it's just something I keep saying over and over again. This team is good at finding people to play the interior that other teams don't want. They're good at it. They are not good at it with tackle. And I don't fully know why that is.
So you think they shouldn't re-sign Quentin Nelson because they can just find anyone and focus that those dollars on tackles? We'll make sure that's the headline on the podcast. Don't worry.
No, I'm not saying that. But although I will say this, there are some Nelson injury issues that I think would have to come up in contract talks. Shout out to Brent Fettig from our first fan one for bringing that up. But some of these back issues and stuff. Is something that would give me a little bit of pause. I mean, you still are going to re-sign Quentin, but I think more likely is that Chris Reed is the Mark Glinski replacement next year.
Yeah, that certainly could. I mean, you know, they seem to like him. We barely, you know, we saw him play probably get his most playing time today, and that was handing the ball to Wentz to kneel down there at the end. But,
trying to keep a positive start here, The Jonathan Taylor certainly looked better than he has all year. I give you full credit for bringing this up, reminding Frank Reich to run the ball last week. And certainly he listened to you. He went into the coaching staff and said, hey, by the way, guys, Joel said we should run the ball more. Let's work on that. And we saw it Sunday, and that was the difference.
It really jump-started him, it felt like. I was thinking that I did probably not give Wentz enough credit. The ball he threw to Mo Alie-Cox that – the first kind of explosive play they got, it went for 28 or 24. I can't remember off the top of my head now. But seeing what – we were sitting in the end zone here at Hard Rock Stadium, and they were going away from us. So you kind of had a quarterback's view of it. And when he threw it, I didn't fully understand where the ball was going or what he was trying to do. And it was a good read. There was stuff in between looking at it, you know. So that really is the play that probably got them going. But the 23-yard run from Taylor to score and then to come right back out after the half and go 38 yards up the sideline, that's really what got the offense going. You know, like that they've needed that explosive run. But this is another reason that Chris Reed was a big deal. Both of those runs came over the left side where they would normally run with Quentin there. Chris Reed being good enough to step in and play for Quentin allows them to at least to some degree feel pretty good about, you know, we can run over that side. Taylor wouldn't say that he felt anything from the knee that had him questionable. So I wonder if Marlon Mack getting so many snaps today had to do with just the heat. It was super hot down here. So, and super humid.
It was also odd that they didn't use Hines in the same role. I don't know if that was to, you know, to showcase Mac, which seems a little weird. I don't know why you would do that. That was a little bit different in terms. I mean, maybe did Tom Rathman call up Frank Reich, even though he's not on the staff anymore, and say he fumbled on the punt return, don't play him? That seemed like a strange, it seemed like an interesting decision after what we've seen the rest of this year.
It was a little weird. One of the things I did notice was that there were a lot more snaps with Hines and Taylor on the field together, which is something I've kind of wanted them to do for a long time. Just because I think it makes it hard on the defense. It gives you a lot of options. And they started to do a little bit more of that. But, yeah, this was the game that Nyheim Hines wasn't involved. These happen from time to time over the last couple of seasons. But the way the first couple of games, it thought it looked like Hines had more of a concrete role. And then this week it was like, no, maybe not.
We'll just throw him out. And it's interesting. I mean, there's been a lot of talk. In Philadelphia, Reich used three backs regularly in games. But that's really the only time he's ever done that. He prefers to use a lead back if he has one. Even in San Diego when he was the offensive coordinator, he used a bunch of different guys. But was because they were getting hurt. It was just next man up was the one who'd get all the carries. Then he went to Philadelphia, changed that a little. But in here, Mac was a number one back, and then obviously Taylor was a number one back. And I think he clearly – and when you do that, you just don't have enough snaps to play more than two guys, really. I mean, there's just – you can't do it.
A little bit weird that Hines didn't get some of those carries. I agree. Mac, I think, is still just a little bit – the burst is still just a little bit off to me. I could be wrong. I'm not a scout. I just feel like sometimes – there were a couple plays. Like, the first play he got was a stretch play. And I just didn't see the burst he needed to get through the hole. I think he ended up with, like, 12 yards on 9 carries or something like that. Something not good. It was a little weird. I think you'd probably go back to Hines later. I don't know what was going on there. Probably something to ask Reich about this week or Marcus Brady in the next couple days here. But, Taylor, we saw a little bit of this last week. I just looked at the stats. Taylor's up to 4.7 yards a carry. They're starting to get big plays with him. They're starting to get – I don't think they should ride him the way that the Titans are riding Derrick Henry now. He's averaging like 30 carries a game, which is insane, and it's not going to work. Eventually. It might work this season, but eventually they're going to break him into pieces. I don't think they should do that with Taylor. But I wonder if you start ramping him up more and he gets a little bit more, maybe when you're not in the humidity, maybe when his knee isn't bothering him, whatever the reason – you start getting in more of those 20 carry games. Cause this felt like one of them. This felt like it could be one of them. They didn't do that, which was a little surprising.
They got up at the end and it seemed like they were comfortable.
It did seem that with the lead at the end, they were like, you know what? Let's not get Taylor hurt. We're going to put Mac in here. So they started getting some stuff with the run game. And then the thing that was interesting was, Wentz had all those short passes at the beginning. They weren't getting explosive plays other than the play to Ali Cox. And then he started to make some plays when they really needed it. Every time the Dolphins started to kind of score, and get some points and kind of try to make the game closer. And it felt like every time that happened, Wentz made a play there late. There was the pass to Pascal, the kind of 50-50 ball to Jack Doyle. I thought he actually made a really good throw on the Paris Campbell deep ball early in the game, and Campbell just didn't catch it.
Yeah, oh, yeah, that was a clear drop, him right in the arm. I mean, you know, he's got a guy draped on him, and he's running. I mean, it's not like anyone's just going to make that catch, but the ball hit him in the elbow, and he should have caught that ball.
Yeah, it's the NFL. Like, that's exactly the kind of play you have to have. You just have to have it, you know? And I thought that was a pretty good throw. But you started to get some plays from Wentz. They had 4 explosive plays today, 4 plays over 20 yards passing. You add those to the Taylor play. And I know there's this feeling like this is what I wrote about today. There's this feeling that the Colts offense is kind of stumbling over itself. But we kind of had this last year with Phillip Rivers right around the same time. Felt like the offense was stumbling over itself. Didn't know what it was. Wondering about the new quarterback. Rivers had all of training camp healthy. Wentz wasn't on the field. I know the Colts like walkthrough, but it's not the same as knowing where guys are going to be and how they react and all that stuff, who he can throw contested balls to, who he can feel comfortable in. They're kind of learning this stuff as they go. And so I wonder if maybe we're not seeing the same thing we saw last year. Last year, it didn't seem like such a big deal because the defense played lights out in the first half of the season. They were getting wins anyway. This year, because the defense played so badly in the first 3 games, it was like, man, the offense isn't scoring. It's kind of the same hiccups that they had before. You know, they had some points, like that 28 points and 36 points early in the – but some of that was boosted by interceptions that the Vikings and Jets threw, you know, during the Rivers era. So I wonder if we're not seeing a little bit of that. Wentz flat out said today, too, that because of his ankles, there's stuff that they installed in the offense and wanted to make a big part of the offense that they haven't been able to get to yet. So
he definitely seemed better today than he did last week. I mean, last week it was clear he was not the same guy. This week it seemed like he certainly wasn't 100%, but he could still do that stuff when he needed to. You know, when someone's when the giant defensive end is bearing down on you, last week his instinct was to throw the ball on the ground. This week it was run away. Even maybe if he shouldn't have every time, but still, it seemed like that's where his mind and body were going.
And I gotta think that having Julian Davenport at one tackle is limiting some play calls too. I just assume it is.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and I mean, you referenced the Luck's first year. They had all kinds of issues with the offensive line's health, and you know, they were still okay. They didn't get Luck hit a lot, but the offense wasn't this. And you referenced this too in numerous times that there were not a lot of big plays early in that season from Andrew Luck in the passing game. It wasn't until later in the season when they got the running game going, when they got the offensive line healthy, that we saw the real Frank Reich offense that he wanted to run.
Yeah, this takes a little bit of time, and we probably should have been expecting it. We probably should have talked about it more. I know I mentioned it a couple times. I don't know if I mentioned it enough. We wrote at least one story. We wrote at least one story with a headline on it about maybe we should wait. But it's one of those things to remember. I think because the defense isn't having these big games where they're holding people to no points, it seemed like a bigger deal. But they're starting to show signs. They're starting to show signs that they're starting to figure some stuff out. If Wentz gets healthy, you know, apparently the bootleg run wasn't supposed to be a quarterback run. It was supposed to be a throw the ball, and if you feel pressure, just take a short sack. But if I'm Frank Reich and I see Wentz get that yardage on a boot running the ball, my instinct's going to be, you know what, maybe I should put some boots in there.
He has been the second most effective runner after Taylor. I mean, obviously, it's a totally different style when you're the quarterback versus the running back. But you mentioned the defense a couple times. Let's start there. They were not perfect today, but they were better, I thought. I mean, clearly, they're, you know, again, we're going from Russell Wilson and Matthew Stafford and Ryan Tannehill, who doesn't get enough credit as a quarterback, to Jacoby Brissett. That's a big difference. So how much of this was the defense showing improvement? How much of it was that they just weren't facing an elite offense for the first time this year?
I think a lot of it was that they were facing Jacoby Brissett. And I'm going to get a quick rant in here. I don't know that having Jacoby Brissett on the roster at backup quarterback would it be the giant upgrade that people think it was over Brett Hundley and Jacob Eason. Is it an upgrade? Yes. But did Jacoby look great today? Jacoby looked terrible today.
Once they were down three scores, he had no choice but to throw the ball that deep. He looked pretty good.
I know, but before that, it was just so much of this. Every snap was just, he takes the snap, waits too long, rolls out to the right, either throws incomplete or gets in trouble like he did with the Grover Stewart fumble. His yards per attempt was, like, I was kind of upset that he got the big plays at the end, because we were heading for a yards per attempt that was going to be like something I remembered for my entire life. It was like,
well, in the first half, it was Wentz was at like 4.9 or 5.2 and Brissett's at 3.8. So I'm going on Pro Football Reference and I'm looking up what's the lowest combined yards per attempt by two quarterbacks in a game. Unfortunately, it was a lot more complicated to figure it out than I was going to. I was willing to wait until after the game to figure it out. But I had gone back a ways and had not found anything much. I had not found anything close yet, but I hadn't looked at all the games. But yeah, it was potentially historic there in the first half.
Yeah, Brissett, like, for most of the game, their passing game was kind of a bad running game because of how few yards they were getting every time they threw it.
Do you think the NFL would be okay if you had Brissett as your quarterback and you went to the NFL and said, okay, we're going to make it say the other team has 17 points at the start of the game and we have zero. Eventually we'll correct it, but we just want to make sure Jacoby thinks we're down three scores at the start. We'll tell the other team.
Actually take chances.
We'll tell the refs. We just want to make it look like it's 17 to nothing, so he'll show a little urgency, or, and I mean, that's not the right word, but a little bit of aggressiveness in the passing game.
Somebody posed the question to me, would I rather have had the Carson Wentz who played last week against Tennessee with no mobility, having to throw the ball in the dirt, or Jacoby? And I said I'd take Carson. And at the time, I got a lot of crap for that, and like I was crazy. And after watching today, I'm still taking Carson Wentz.
I think I take Brissett, but it's a lot closer than it should be and that I would have thought it was last week, 100%.
Also, in a shout-out to Jim Aiello, the Colts stopped Jacoby Brissett in short yardage.
Absolutely. Yeah, the greatest short yardage back in NFL history got stopped by the Colts. They probably know some secret about that, I'm sure, but you know, from watching them play all last year.
Anyway, so I thought a lot of it was just who they were playing. Brissett got out of some sacks, but he took some sacks. Kamoko Ture looked really good against, but the problem is that it's that the right tackle was a Dolphins rookie. I mean, he's a second round pick, but he's still a rookie. So can Kamoko, you know, keep building and keep doing this against other teams? We have to see. That they really need Rocky Sin back fast. I don't.
Words no one thought would be said this season.
No, that's true. And it's wild to think about it that way because of just what his reputation was with the Colts his first 2 years. But Isaiah Rodgers was not good today.
Yeah, no one. I mean, that's not the job. That's not his job. I mean,
he had a tackle. He decided to push somebody out of bounds in the first half instead of tackling him. And it was Jalen Waddle. He tried to push Jalen Waddle out of bounds when Jalen Waddle clearly still had plenty of sideline to work with. And he should have just tackled him. And Waddle got a first down out of it. The deep ball to Parker, I don't understand how Rodgers didn't get more of a hand on it. He was there. Like, ball skills are supposed to be his thing. Get your hands on the football.
And Rhodes didn't look great at the end of the game either when Brissett was going all around.
Rhodes has really struggled the first 2 weeks. You know, he's grabbing too much when he gets the ball deep. You know, he's struggling with these receivers. This is not the Xavier Rhodes that they had last year, and that's a problem. That's how you end up in a position where you're going, man, they really need Rocky Sin back. I don't think anybody saw that coming, but here we are.
Yeah, Rhodes has been hurt. You know, he's coming off the injury too, and we should point that out. No one's using it as an excuse, and this is the NFL. It's not an excuse, but it still should be noted. They made some big plays on defense, and I mean, it's easy to say the difference was facing Jacoby Brissett because they've made a few big plays in other games. They just haven't been able to get the other team off the field. When you're going up against Jacoby Brissett, it's probably a little bit easier to get them off the field. I guess we'll get another test, obviously, with the Ravens and Lamar Jackson.
The biggest thing I thought, and this will matter next week against the Ravens, but the biggest thing I thought is that you're starting to see some stuff with the run defense. I know Miami was ranked terribly in run, but like Myles Gaskin came in averaging like 5.1 yards a carry. Their other running back had 4, so they'd had some success with their running backs a little bit, their top guys, and they didn't do anything today. The running backs didn't do anything today for the Dolphins. There were stretches against the Titans where it looked like they were playing pretty well against Henry, so maybe that's starting to round into form a little bit. That's something that maybe you feel good about. You feel good about Ture. I think you definitely feel good about Ture. The secondary's angles and tackling is the big – Leonard and Okereke are starting to tackle better. Leonard is still not himself. You could tell on the fumble recovery. He run down by an offensive lineman.
Yeah, he was barely moving. Yeah, it's to his credit, he's playing, but it's not the same.
Well, he's playing, and he's starting to compensate for it a little bit, you know. So those guys are starting to tackle a little bit better, but there was just so many plays early on where the secondary – Julian Blackman had one where he took a bad angle and just kind of fell down because of the bad angle. And so the secondary's got to get some of that stuff figured out. I still don't know how much I believe in the pass rush. A lot of it depends on when Quiddy Pay comes back and how hurt he is and all that stuff.
Yeah, I mean the bottom line in the modern NFL is that you got to get to the pass. You got to disrupt the passer some way, somehow. And if you can't do that, pretty much nothing else matters. I'm not saying you got to do it on every play, obviously, but if you can somewhat consistently do that, you're not going to beat too many teams. You still might beat the Dolphins.
Yeah, I think listeners of this podcast know I care about pass rush more than almost anything in the NFL. And I still haven't seen it. Kamoko's second sack was really good. He essentially did to Eichenberg what Ogba did to Davenport. But you still need to see a little bit more of that. I'd still like to see something more from Tyquan Lewis. You want the pass rush to get better, but they got 3 sacks today. That helps. There were too many times. I think one thing that would concern me greatly going into the Baltimore game is how many times Brissett escaped the pocket. Because Jacoby Brissett, aka the slow pony, aka Big Tuna, aka the plotting porpoise, which is a really good name from a fan. When he breaks the pocket, he's really not going that far. He's not very fast. He's really, really slow. Lamar Jackson is the opposite. Lamar Jackson is faster than most players in the NFL. When he does that, it's going to be like 20 yards. So that's going to be an issue. They're probably going to do crush rush next week where they're not really trying to go hard. They're trying to contain. But even that against Lamar is tough. So that I think is probably a concern, at least for that game. So, yeah, I'm not totally buying what I saw from the defense. Miami came in ranked in the bottom quarter of the league in almost every offensive category. The offensive stuff, I feel like, is maybe a little bit more sustainable going forward. I think the biggest thing with the offense, I don't remember if I said this, but we're four games in now, and Carson Wentz has thrown one pick. It was a fluke pick on a shovel pass. And I think everybody, like so many national experts were like, I can't believe the Colts are going for Carson Wentz. He's going to throw so many interceptions. We just haven't seen that guy. He hasn't done that yet.
Yeah, no, I mean, we've talked about this before, but the number one question going into the season was, what are you going to get out of Carson Wentz? And that's been he's been fine or better, except for the injury. And, that's been everything else. Right after this one, what are you thinking? I mean, this is still, I mean, is, you know, last week they were an 0-3 team and looked terrible. Are they a 500 team after this? Or, I mean, where do you think they're at based on what we've seen through four games?
Well, I think if you're a Colts fan, you should feel good about the fact that they beat what I think is a bad Dolphins team, because there's going to be a bad Jets team on the schedule. There's two games against bad Jaguars teams and bad Texans teams on the schedule. They're going to have some of these, you know, they're going to have some games like this. You want them to be able to win those games. This shows is that this team is more than like an awful team, you know, like that when they were 0-3, they were in there with a bunch of other teams that are going to be awful. Giants are going to be awful. The Jets are going to be awful. Lions are going to be awful. Jaguars are going to be awful. Colts, I think, proved that they're not awful because of the way they played today. I think the biggest thing that should give Colts fans hope, if you're looking for hope, is not something that happened here in Miami. I think the biggest thing that should give fans hope is something that happened in New Jersey. That's where that game was, I think. The Jets beat the Titans.
Very important game, because if the Colts win out, then they win the AFC South. They win it on the common game. No, I'm sorry. I tweeted it was on the common games tiebreaker. It's actually on the conference record tiebreaker. But so if the Colts go 13-0 the rest of the way and the Titans go 12-1 because they would lose to the Colts get the playoff bid. Pretty sure the Titans would also make the playoffs at that point. So that's probably not quite as big a deal as I'm making out of it. But to me, you look at the schedule, okay, you've got to assume they're beating the Texans twice and the Jaguars twice. I think you got to assume they're going to beat the Jets and probably the Raiders at home. So what are we at there? That's six wins. So that's seven total. That's not going to get you in the playoffs.
I really think they're playing a little bit better against some of these teams, and they get a couple. You could get in the nine range. And if you look at Tennessee's schedule, them taking a second loss against the Jets and maybe being a little gettable, like there's a chance that this is a return to the old days of the AFC South, when everyone was like, this division's terrible. They have no business doing anything. Here's the thing about terrible divisions. They're gettable.
Yeah. And you don't need to apologize for it. So
you can be flawed and still get into the playoffs. So the Titans are now only one game up, and the Colts have a chance to get that back when they play the Titans. So, and the Titans actually have a really brutal stretch of their schedule coming up. The Colts are one game away from being out of theirs. The Titans have, after they play the Jaguars next week, it's just murderer's row for them for like 6 weeks.
Yeah, so, the Colts mix it up a little, but I think they got to win at Baltimore or at San Francisco. You know, it's at Baltimore, Houston at home, at San Francisco. If they don't get one of those two, and then you have the Titans after that, which is, you know, certainly another game you got to win. If you do not get either the Ravens or the 49ers, I just don't see a way, anything can happen. It's still early, all that stuff. But right now, there's no clear way to make the playoffs if you don't get one of those wins, because you dropped the two home games at the beginning of the year to Seattle and Los Angeles. I mean, you needed to come out with at least one of those games as a win to have a shot here, I think.
Totally agree with that. The only thing is, like I said, the Titans dropped a game they're not supposed to.
Right, but they also beat Seattle, which they shouldn't have. So
that's a good point.
But yeah, that's but all right. Well, we'll wrap it up here. Again, all Colts fans, remember they number one, you cannot. They do not control their own destiny. They do not control their own fate. By definition, destiny and fate are out of your control. So do not use that phrase. However, if they win the rest of their games, they will automatically make the playoffs. So we have that to look forward to over the last the last 13 games.
Well, I don't think that's probably not going to happen. But at the very least, at least they won. Like, if they're 0-4 and we're doing this podcast, especially against that Dolphins team.
Yeah, it's over. If they lose this game, there's no. I mean, it's at that point, you're asking yourself, which games are we holding Carson Wentz out? Because the last thing you want is your third overall pick going to the Eagles. You've already put Nelson on the IR. You're asking if you're doing something with Leonard, all that stuff. So yeah, we get to enjoy this for three. I think you got to win at Ravens or at 49ers. You got to assume they're going to beat the Texans at home. So that gives us 3 weeks here to see where the Colts are at.
To see if they can get themselves back in the mix, basically.
Yeah, absolutely. He's Joel A. Erickson, IndyStar's Colts Insider. I'm Nat Newell, Colts Editor. Please go to IndyStar.com, read all of our stuff, and we'll be back again Monday night, or very early Monday morning, more likely, next week.